Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, 12 minutes after 12 on this. It's a beautiful Monday afternoon, really, just because it's not raining. That makes that qualifies for beauty these days. Rain coming up a little bit later, but we'll start off the program with the people from Chicago Inn. Karis Husted and Jim Dahlke are here. A little bit later, we'll talk to Andrew Challenger from Challenger Gray and Christmas about the growing importance of internships when it comes to landing a job and keeping a job, which interests me because I thought we were moving away from internships around here, but apparently not. Are there internships at Chicago Inno?
Oh, yeah, paid internships.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good. So I've got two kids interested in communications. I'll send them your way.
Yeah, please.
They don't have to apply, do they? Are they set?
We have a rigorous in-person application process.
Okay, so I am so excited to talk to you guys because you're always more fun than when Will is here.
Yeah, and he's a snooze.
He is kind of a snooze. He's the boss, so we can talk about him all we want. But this is National Mental Health Awareness Week, right? And Jim, you write a piece about this new company in Chicago, a startup called Trigger, which, wow, if this really works, could change the way people with dependency issues really kind of operate.
Yeah, Trigger is a startup in Chicago that's tackling addiction and substance abuse in a really, truly innovative way. It's sort of measuring a person's cell phone behavior to determine if they're likely to relapse. So Trigger exists as an app on your phone. They're working with different rehab facilities to get this app onto people who are dealing with addiction and substance abuse. And basically what it's doing is sort of measuring your phone behavior to know when you are participating in activity that's outside of your normal behavior.
And so the idea is if I'm doing well, I am on Facebook for this amount of time, I'm texting this amount of time, generally I might be surfing or talking to people.
Exactly.
So when that pattern starts to go a little bit out of whack,
if you're texting way less than you normally do, if you're sleeping, it measures your sleeping behavior. So if your sleeping patterns are all out of whack, if your location is way different than it normally is, it's looking at all these things to see, maybe something's a little off. And they've got their predictive analytics technology that can tell, or that can predict with 92% accuracy 3 days before a person slips in their recovery. So then they can actively send you a text message, a phone call, an in-app message to say, hey, how's it going? Let's chat. How can we help you in your recovery? And actively reach out before something, before someone slips in their recovery.
A guy named John Haskell is in behind it, right?
Exactly. And you know, this app was sort of founded by a friend of his was going through her own issues with addiction and was really ready to take her life. And her mother texted her sort of out of the blue, knowing just sort of that her daughter, something wasn't right with her daughter. Like she wasn't playing words with friends normally as she does, and reached out, kind of sort of a motherly intuition to see how she's doing.
Well, and that's what struck me because in the quote then from Haskell in the story is that motherly intuition or intuition really is data. You know, we don't think of it that way. We think of it something that is that we divine. But the fact is we're noticing a series of things that are a little bit out of the ordinary, and that's leading us to a conclusion. It's data analysis.
Right. I mean, it's really bringing predictive analytics to people, which is kind of a whole new frontier for the predictive analytics space. You know, we see that being used by uptake in industrial machinery, trying to predict when, you know, a piece of machinery is going to break down. But more and more, we're realizing that, yeah, we can take some of these things that we thought of as being very human traits, intuition, and that type of thing, and bring a little bit of data to them.
And it's called, in its Trigger, it's what it's called. Is it available to people now?
So what they're doing is they're going to slowly roll it out on a person-by-person basis, but okay. Really they're working with rehab centers right now. It's Trigger, no E.
Okay.
So typical
Trigger, right,
startup
right.
spelling.
Yeah, it makes it difficult to find. The only other thing I would fix it, not that Haskell has asked me, is it seems to me that if someone's going down a road that a text might not be the thing, that they would need human contact.
Well, you're exactly right. And they tailor it to what the person sort of actively says they want. So if they want to be connected with a specialist over the phone, they can. If they want to sort of set up an in-person meeting, that can absolutely happen as well. So it's really at the preference of the patient, whether they prefer a text message or a phone call or like to set up an in-person sit-down.
Very cool. Okay, so there's that. Karis, you wrote about this company, Boy.
Buoy.
Mm-hmm. Boy.
Yep, just like the bobbing buoys in the ocean.
And they're kind of like the party people for corporations.
Yeah, so basically if you have a high growth company, your biggest focus isn't what perks will I give my employee this Friday. You're not thinking about yoga classes or improv classes or a manicure bar or anything like that. But those are actually really important for retaining the talent.
Did you see Jim light up when you said manicure bar?
Hey, yeah. They're great. Very relaxing. Self-care is very important. But you know, if you want to keep your great employee like Jim, you know, he's looking for his manicure perk. And so, but if you're the CEO of a high growth company, you're just not thinking about it. So Buoy comes in and it basically takes care of all of that for you.
So it's like you're outsourcing fun.
Yep. You're outsourcing the perks, the benefits, and kind of those little extra touches that really help keep employees happy
at
their job.
And how are they doing?
So they're doing pretty well. They've onboarded about 101 vendors to their perk membership. They're working with 5 companies so far, and they started just in January, so kind of getting the ball rolling there. And so they've kind of got a little bit of the ball rolling, but they're hoping to expand.
Very cool idea, because you're right. I mean, so many, you know, any company they're always looking for. I mean, there used to be party planners or whatever, right? But why take your employees' time away from the mission to do that when you can contract it out? Buoy. Okay, so say it again.
Buoy.
Buoy. I say boy. No?
I think it's buoy, B-U-O-Y.
Yeah, I know what it is.
Okay.
We say buoy in the South.
Do they?
Yeah.
That's another reason to say boy.
Boy.
All right, it's 12:18. We're going to take a break. It's 12:22. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's Monday. That means Chicago Inno in the studio. Caris Husted is here. Jim Dahlke as well. The James Beard Awards are tonight in Chicago. Once again, second year, third year?
Yeah, I think third year.
Third year.
Mm-hmm.
And so Caris Husted looked at fine dining in the city, which is very big. And, of course, food delivery is very big. Will the two ever marry?
Right. Well, that's like the big question, because they're the two fastest growing segments. Grubhub just had an insane quarter. They had a 78% increase in quarterly profit, and number of active diners went up 26%. But at the same time, you're seeing the growth of like celebrity chefs and the Netflix series that digs into their lives. So my question was,
Confidential Kitchen, is that what it's?
That is one of those. I mean, there's
Chef's
so many
table.
At this point.
Chef's Table, that's
mm-hmm.
it, right.
Yeah, so there's so many at this point that like we're seeing this like increase in popularity of fine dining. So my question was, here are the two fastest growing segments. Will they mix? Are we going to see like Alinea's edible balloons being delivered to your front door kind of thing? So I talked to a few different chefs, some Michelin-starred chefs and James Beard Award winners, and the long story short is no, they're not. We're not going to see delivery working in fine dining just yet. But that doesn't mean that chefs aren't thinking about it. So the biggest thing is they don't want to sacrifice quality. So they're actually trying to tailor their menus so that they choose the food that delivers the best and can still give that quality experience.
Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering what the market would be for it anyway, because if you're going to really spend a lot of money for food, which you would at Alinea, is that the sort of stuff you want to eat on your Formica table at home in front of the, you know, Beverly Hillbillies?
Right. And I don't think that we've seen any
data. Did I just flash back to the 70s?
Reference is a little over my head.
Yeah, okay.
I don't think we're seeing any data yet that shows that, you know, the bring your food home and eat it in front of Netflix is really any threat to the fine dining experience that some of these, you know, Michelin-starred restaurants have. But it's not that these restaurants aren't going kind of all in on technology and innovation. Where they're doing that is on booking. So you're seeing a lot of high-end restaurants partner with Talk.
We've talked
startup.
About Talk, right.
Exactly. And this is an app that lets you pay in advance before you get to the restaurant and sort of really solidifies a booking issue for a restaurant. A lot of restaurants use OpenTable, but some people for a date night will book 3 or 4 different restaurants in OpenTable and only go to one. But Talk makes you put a little skin in the game.
So I guess the point is, if you're selling barbecue, you might need people to eat barbecue to succeed. If you're a fine dining restaurant, the Grill and the Goat, people are going to go there to go there. So there's not necessarily a market. I mean, I guess what they're selling is the experience of being in that spot, not just the food.
Yeah, and I think actually what is interesting is that it is that mid-tier that's either going one way or the other. David Chang, who's the chef at Momofuku, which is a really famous restaurant in New York, recently opened a virtual restaurant, so it's only doing delivery. So I think you'll see more people going in that direction, going still maybe having the fine dining pedigree, but thinking more about how can we get this food to the people who just want to eat on their couch tonight.
All right, there's that. So you have predictions for the Beard Awards tonight, Jim?
Olive Garden is kind of a dark horse, I think.
The breadsticks.
The breadstick. Yeah. Unlimited, I know. Yeah.
So many breadsticks.
Okay, I'm sorry I asked you guys that. on Friday, today's, yeah, so on Friday, I had one of the people in behind this Northwestern University Maker Conference, right? They started Friday morning, worked through the weekend. I don't know how they did. I should have looked that up, but they were to work on projects, physically make things over the weekend to solve problems. And the whole making of it is really an area where maybe Chicago Tech is moving.
Yeah, absolutely. So in the past, we've seen this thing called the maker movement. And it's basically people who are hobbyists and tinkerers who like to play around with 3D printers and Arduino kits and just say, what can I make out of this thing? But what we're actually seeing now is a lot more of the infrastructure popping up for the making to turn into entrepreneurship. So these are people who are making physical products, finding ways to manufacture them and scale them up so they can be really profitable startups.
So it's one thing to come up with the idea or to come up with the scheme and all of this and the planning. Now what we're seeing is infrastructure. Was it MHUB? We've had them on before.
So MHUB was announced last October and opened officially this past March. And basically, this is one of the biggest initiatives in the space. They have over 2.5 million in manufacturing and prototyping equipment. They allow entrepreneurs there to do small runs of their prototypes. They can start getting those out to people who are interested. And that's been a big missing link for maker entrepreneurs in the past.
Yeah, I interrupted myself, but that's the point of it. I mean, you don't just have to come up with the idea or plan or pretend anymore. You can actually go to these places and make your stuff, which is a pretty amazing thing.
Yeah, and that like collision between entrepreneurs, engineers, artists, and makers is what's really setting these places apart, because you need all of those different parts to create a successful venture. You can't just be the engineer and create a product anymore. You have to have all those elements.
That's Kars Husted. Jim Dahlke is in the studio as well, and those are the things they write about. They're really cool ideas. I like that you guys had some great ideas today at Chicago Inno. Where do people find out more info from you guys?
ChicagoInno.com. Also, subscribe to The Beat. It's our daily newsletter. We're talking all this kind of stuff every day.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGNR. We're going to talk internships. Maybe this is the time. Here we are in, May. It might be a little late for people to be lining up internships for the summer. Not sure about that. We'll ask Andy Challenger. He's the vice president at Challenger, Gray, and Christmas, and joins us in the studio now. Andy, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks so much for having me.
Bring that a little closer to you. Sure. So this is kind of too late for the, if you're going to find an internship for your summer break now, probably getting a little late in the game.
It's late in the game, but it's not too late. We see, companies still scrambling to hire extra interns right up until, June.
Okay, so here's the thing, and I was telling you this a little bit off the air. I thought that there was a real movement away from having interns, here at WGN Radio, we had interns forever, and then we had unpaid interns for a time, and now we really don't have them at all. But that's not the way it is around the country in general.
Yeah, that shift you're talking about did happen, where companies were just getting in trouble for having too many unpaid interns.
Right. It was cheap labor.
Cheap labor, and they were just eliminating those altogether throughout the recession.
Right, so rather than pay someone minimum wage to do something, they're like, We're going to just steer clear of all of it.
But now, kind of on the other side of the recession, when we're in a boom time, labor markets are tight. Companies are fighting to retain and attract good employment and talent, and they're willing to pay up to get interns in the door, even just for a couple months.
And so it's the thing, and I never thought of this, because I'm always thinking from the intern version of it, where you're sort of desperate for exposure or experience, but really this pays off for the companies as well.
Yeah, absolutely. They're getting people with the newest skill sets they're learning in school right then. They're getting them in, and they get to interview them for basically a three-month interview.
How often does an intern at a company end up being an employee at the company?
I think last summer, 63% of people that held internships ended up getting at least one job offer.
At the place where they were an intern?
All the way around the board.
Okay. So the idea is that if you get this experience and you become an intern, it's going to pay off for you in one way or another.
Yep.
So if you are an intern and you want an internship, one of the things that strikes me as being good advice is that you should keep your sort of options open. Don't lock in on one spot and say, this is where I want to work, because you might be shutting the door on some remarkable opportunity elsewhere.
It's just like a job search. There's a couple headline names that every college student wants to go work at: Facebook, Google, Uber, these kind of top headline Fortune 100 companies. But there are so many more small to medium-sized companies out there that are going to give you a great working experience and really give you real responsibility.
And you might be better off at one of those companies.
It's so true. Those companies in general might be they're fighting more than some of those headline companies to get people in the door.
And you would have a chance to do maybe a little bit more than you would at a strict internized company.
Yeah, you're going to one of those other companies, you could easily be just filing and copying all summer long.
Okay, so you've got me wondering here now, if there's great demand for interns, is this, I mean, interns aren't in a position to negotiate, are they?
Probably not salary. Okay, you don't have a really strong negotiating platform. Okay. But, you know, when you're in there, you can ask for more work and responsibility. That's something you can do. And just get into that company and start asking for more ways to help.
And keep the door open, right? Keep the door open to experience.
Absolutely.
I was telling you, one of the suggestions you guys have is the fact that, you know, what you, we just kind of covered it, but what you think you want might not be the opportunity that presents itself. I was an intern at WGN in the 80s, and I came down from Marquette one Friday afternoon to take the internship for WGN-TV. And while I was there, Ann Corbillis was the woman. I'll never forget her. She said, hey, you want to apply for a radio internship too? And it wasn't why I made the drive. It wasn't my plan. But I said, sure, why not? And I got the radio internship and, you know, have been plaguing people ever since.
And that's such an incredible story. And it's something you hear a lot is people come in with one mindset. They're smart enough to go network around, like something you did. Clearly, you go meet other people within the organization, you build relationships, and you go get informational coffees with people to learn about other parts of the company.
I'll tell you one better. I was in Milwaukee, and the White Sox were playing the Brewers. It's back when the Brewers were in the American League in the old days. Yeah. We went to the bar where the Sox would hang out after the game and ran into one of the announcers. Ken Allen was his name for the White Sox. I kept buying him beers until he gave me the name of someone at WGN who I could contact to get an internship.
Well, if most interns had half the, you know, wherewithal and drive that you had when you were going through it, they would all end up with jobs. That's really valuable.
That's nice of you, Andy, but it really was desperation. Like that. Yeah. But isn't there a risk, because you talk about networking and trying to get extra experience in this department, that department. I mean, having dealt with interns for 30 years or more, there's a line between helpful and eager and, you know, kind of annoying.
Yeah, you don't want to make – you're there to help your potential employer. This is a long interview in a lot of ways to prove to them that you're somebody that can come in. They'd like to work with you day in and day out. You're there to help them. You're going to make their lives easier. So you don't want to be harassing them so much. You're actually giving them more
There's
work.
A little humility. You have to bring a little humility into
yeah,
it.
Yeah, true.
And you have to dress like the old people.
Yeah, so, you know, particularly in interviews, we tell people, okay to overdress, right? You know, err on the side of being a little overdressed. But an internship, you have enough of a time period where you really want to adjust. You want to be moving and adjusting to the culture of the company and really blending in and fitting in with the people around you.
How do you then find an internship? I mean, do you rely on your university, your school for suggestions, or do you go out on your own, or how are they typically found?
Universities and schools is a great way, but so many people.
Parents,
friends of parents. You're trying to get out there and just talk to people and say, hey, your job sounds interesting. Right. Would you go tell me about it? Do you have any openings this summer? Do you know anybody that does?
Tom Gimbel, who from the LaSalle Network comes in. You know Tom? Every Friday comes in. And one of the things he's told me, and this is tough because as a parent of two college-age intern-seeking students, you know, Gimbel says, I don't want to hear from the parents, or I want the students to reach out to me and say, hey, I know you work with my dad or you work with my mom. I'd like to sit in with you. So there's an idea of using the contact, but not relying on the contact, maybe.
Yeah. Anytime you're showing your own initiative, that's better than somebody introducing it for you. But, you know, if you can get that information, the contact information from your parents about friends, they'll have a good idea of where good jobs are and
so
what good companies
are. So parents lay back and not contact? Because I called Gimbel every day. Really, it got me nowhere.
parents do need to take a little bit of backseat, make sure their kids are taking their own responsibility for getting these introductions and these initial meetings. But it's okay to guide them. That's something you can do as a parent that's really valuable.
And here's the thing then. Let's wrap it up this way. We've been going at it from the student angle. If you are a CEO or running your own company, your own store, what is the benefit to you today on May 1st to having an intern this summer?
Yeah, you get to test somebody out for 3 months and see if they're going to be a great fit for your organization. You're probably going to get somebody that's fresh and young, knows the best skill sets out there, and you can really get to test them.
You can
them
learn
out.
From them.
You can learn from them.
Andy Challenger, the Vice President Challenger Grain Christmas. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much for listening. I appreciate that. John Najarian will be in tomorrow. Apple will report its earnings tomorrow. I don't know if it's before the bell or after, but we'll talk to John Najarian about that and other things out of Wall Street tomorrow afternoon here on the Business Lunch. Randy Schaefer writes about social media for the Chicago Tribune, and she joins us now. Randy, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Well, thank you for having me, as always.
I like when you send me articles, different things to talk about, because it just shows how much I don't know. For example, I said, I know nothing about Fry Fest. When you came in, you said, well, it's Fire Fest. What is Fire Fest, F-Y-R-E, just sort of blew up over the weekend, or what exactly happened there?
Blew up both kind of literally and figuratively.
Right, right.
So what this was, a little bit of a recap if you are not sure what Fry Festival or Fire Festival is. Ja Rule decided to throw a music festival, and they decided to make this massive, all-encompassing thing in the Bahamas. They were going to build an entire island from scratch, and it was basically going to be like a Coachella on steroids. So this massive A-list filled music festival. And
it was supposed to be having just wrapped up yesterday?
Yeah, it was supposed to be 2 weekends. So it was supposed to have just wrapped up yesterday. But unfortunately, it never really got off the ground. And this is a good example of what happens when you put all of your budget on a project toward marketing and nothing toward actually building the infrastructure or making the project.
So what happened?
Basically, all of these models and social media influencers had spent a year hyping up this amazing music festival. Festival goers flew out there, and you know, they paid between $500 to $49,000 for a ticket.
Wow.
Flew out there, and there was nothing. There were tents. There was no gourmet meals
in
service.
The Bahamas.
Yes, in the Bahamas.
So it physically happened, but they got there and it didn't happen.
It physically half happened. Half right. of them were flown out to the island. The other half never made it out of Miami. The half that was flown there, they were just stranded. There was no food. There was no water. You know, there's a photo of like a half built, like a wooden frame that says concierge on it, and just not a person in sight.
So, and the idea is that the so-called the influencers, as they're called, right? Social media influencers.
Right.
Who are
Kendall Jenner, people like that. Kylie Jenner, bloggers.
And so
models.
They were they probably paid?
Yeah, absolutely.
They were paid to hype this so that people would pay for it and go see it. But the influencers really can't be trusted because they're doing what they're being paid to do.
Right.
And there was nothing behind it.
Right. And it's kind of, did these models, influencers even know what they were promoting, or did they know and just not care and wanted to receive a paycheck? And so it's kind of a good reminder to be very skeptical when you're buying what, you know, Kendall Jenner is selling on Instagram.
Yeah, well, that's kind of a rule I live by, Randy. I am always very skeptical.
Every time you see her post in your feed, you've got to double check.
The next time will be the first time. I have to say that. Okay, so that's that. That's Fire Fest. And if they ask you to go next year, we're going to just say no,
just
right?
Just say no, yes.
Give them a few years. Let's see how they can do it. Okay, so that's one that I didn't know about. The other is this Best of All Worlds, or BOAW, as it's called.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's a hashtag or just a BOAW.
I was going to say wow, but wow. I'm sure I have enough knowledge to know that's not right. Wow. And this is I don't know what this is. This is like an exclusive Facebook sort of group, or what do they do?
Yeah, so I guess this is for the same crowd as the Fire Festival crowd. So once they're done with this past weekend, they can return to their luxury social media sites. And this is a very interesting feature that The Verge wrote about how A-list celebrities use social media personally. And we all know they're selling stuff on Instagram and they're posting stuff on Twitter, but if you've ever wondered if they actually connect, you know how we do on Facebook with our friends and family, a lot of them do, and there are these super fancy, exclusive social media sites that are basically digital country clubs.
So the idea that physical country clubs are failing a little bit, but these digital ones are starting to thrive.
Right, exactly.
Is it where they just kind of sit around and talk about all the little people who can't belong?
Well, yes, but also this Best of All Worlds is kind of billed as a Facebook meets Yelp. So, you know, people are traveling and they want to meet other rich people to visit with, and they want to stay at the best hotels and eat at the best restaurants. And this is kind of their app to figure out how to get away from us peasants.
Do they want to be big?
Do they want to be big as in famous?
Yeah, no, I mean, does the Best of All Worlds, does it hope to expand and become a little Facebook Lite or something like that?
You know, that's interesting. They don't. They want to keep it exclusive. But as we all remember, Facebook started with invite-only Ivy League college.
Yeah, I didn't know that till I read it. So in the beginning of Facebook, you had to be in the Ivy League, an Ivy League student to belong.
And then it slowly expanded to college students and then just everyone. So I'm not sure if you'll get a yacht if you end up joining Best of All Worlds eventually.
Oh, no, I'll get a yacht.
You'll get a yacht.
I'll get a yacht.
All right.
Yik Yak is something we've talked a lot about here and elsewhere. It's that sort of, it's a hyper-local chat room sort of, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of, like, my kids went to Deerfield High School. They shut it down because people were using it to sort of beat up on other people in cyberspace. And now Yik Yak altogether is going away?
Yep. Yik Yak is being taken off the internet, or I guess out of the App Store. It is slowly being shut down.
What happened?
I'm not really sure, to be honest. I saw a piece about it getting shut down, and I know that in the past the app has kind of been a victim. I guess it's not a victim. It's fallen. It's had a lot of problems with hate speech or bomb threats or racist incidents, and that kind of happens when you have a website that's sort of a combination of Reddit and Twitter upvoting, and, you know, it's all anonymous. And so these kind of issues have been around for a while.
So
I think
school administrators can rest easy now. Yik Yak. They've outlived Yik Yak.
Yik Yak is done.
It's done.
All right.
Randy Schaefer from the Chicago Tribune, thanks for stopping by today.
Thank you for having me.